Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We got a great show for you here on this Freedom Friday. We're going to talk a little sports. We're going to talk a little bit of life. We're going to talk a little bit of politics. Later on in the second half of the show, David Allen, former Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation CEO. He now is the head of the Nile Rodeo. Big news there, of course. They're building the outdoor grandstands. They're bringing outdoor rodeo back for the Nile for the first time in a long time later this summer. But the other cool thing is David Allen, you know, he used to be the right-hand man for NASCAR's own Dale Earnhardt Sr., and he was the head of marketing for Wrangler Jeans and so much more. Well, David Allen is featured prominently in a new documentary about Dale Earnhardt Sr. So we're going to talk about all that and more with David Allen coming up in the second half of the show. But first up, I had a friend reach out a while back. He said, "Hey, Aaron, you've got to meet this gal. She lives in Red Lodge, Montana. She was an ESPN sports reporter, great career as an ESPN sports reporter and more. And now she lives in Montana, and she's not afraid to mix it up on some of the political issues either. So great to have with us now in studio. We've been working to plan this one for quite some time now. We've got Janine Edwards in the house. Janine, great to see you.
Good morning, Aaron. It's really a pleasure to be on with you. I have spent many mornings in my car listening to your show out here in Montana. So it's a real honor. Honor to be here.
That's crazy because you're a broadcast professional, so it's almost kind of intimidating to know that there's other broadcast professionals that are listening in, because I don't consider myself the most professional of the broadcasters out there. But we have a lot of fun, though. We have a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh, you do, but you're so well informed, and you cover the news of the day so well. And what blows my mind sometimes listening is that you are just as comfortable covering something going on here in Billings, like with a high school team, as you are talking about Putin and Zelensky and what's happening in Washington, D.C. So
you got to be ready. You got to be ready for anything. Well, Caden is our sports guy around here. He's our producer, and he's in the studio next door. But it was really cool. So yesterday I was chatting with General Michael Flynn.
I heard some of that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That was
interview.
Incredible. Incredible to hear from him. But during the break, I was chatting more with General Flynn offline, and he said, "Hey, by the way, I'm a big baseball fan, and I was just reading your coverage of the all-class baseball tournament, and man, that was great coverage. That was great insight." I said, "Hey,
that
was all our producer, Caden. He did a great write-up for our Montana Talks website, so if you haven't checked that out yet, go check it out. He really did a great job. You know, we talked about the all-class first all-class state baseball tournament last week, but he did a great recap for it as well.
That's awesome. And quite a compliment coming from the general.
General Michael Flynn, right? Yeah, I know Caden's probably like, why didn't we get that one on the air? We needed to record him saying that.
Exactly.
Well, what do you want to talk about this morning? Because I got a whole list of stuff.
Oh, gosh. Well, my husband just retired a couple months ago, a Division I college football coach for 30-something years. And I have been coming out here for 4 summers by myself, but he is now finally here and has joined me.
But you've got some funny stories, apparently, from your time already. So,
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, now, Janine, if I was a more professional broadcaster, I would have asked you for an official bio before I had you come in the studio. Instead, I was like, oh,
Google
shoot.
Works.
Well, Google doesn't work anymore. So I went to Grok. I said, "Hey, Grok, tell me about Janine Edwards, former sports reporter." Tell me if Grok got it right or wrong here. Janine Edwards is a former ESPN/ABC sportscaster known for her 22-year career covering college football, college basketball, and horse racing. But apparently that's how you got your start. You began your career in horse racing as an exercise rider, an apprentice jockey, and a trainer. And then eventually you end up on ESPN, SportsCenter, and more.
A very circuitous route I took to get into broadcasting. Never went to school for it, never had an interest in it. But, yeah, after my thoroughbred racing career ended, and I spent many years in New York and New Jersey, I grew up in New Jersey, was asked to be a guest analyst on the local racing shows in Maryland where I was living, and that became a regular gig. And then I heard about ESPN starting a new live horse racing show in their studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of all places. And so I started commuting to Tulsa on the weekends, and that kind of morphed into covering horse racing on the road, and then doing basketball and football and baseball and everything under the sun. And the last, you know, 7-8 years of my career, I was primarily a SportsCenter reporter, which meant I got to do a lot of breaking news and big stories and big events, and it was just a wonderful time. So I thoroughly enjoyed my work at the network. They were very good to me.
The SportsCenter was like the must, I say was, like the must watch. Like you had, even if you just watched the top 10, like when I was a high school kid in the 90s and then college in the early 2000s, it was like every night you had to watch SportsCenter, even if just for the top 10 highlights of the day. I mean, and then it just kind of got, it was like SportsCenter became more political than Fox and CNN. You know,
I'm telling you, they tried to make a statement. That was when the old head of the network was there, and that was sort of his philosophy. And they did kind of lose their way for a while. And it was a little unsettling because politics, none of that stuff had ever come up before in any production meetings, in any directives that would come down the pike. But then we started getting directives about, you know, covering different issues, LGBTQ and this and that. And it was like, what does this have to do with the game I'm covering tomorrow? Yeah. What does this have to do with Michigan and Ohio State? You know?
Could you imagine covering a rodeo from a gender-neutral standpoint?
Exactly.
Well, coming up next, we have the bull riding. I mean, we're riding something. Yeah. We can't tell you what it is, but we're going to be riding something. Yeah.
I tried to stay away from all of that, but it did kind of go off the rails, and SportsCenter did lose its way in the Jemele Hill and, you know, the Jemele and Michael days of that 6 o'clock show, which was a real shame. But I also think that it's just a sign of the times with social media taking over everything. Most people are now getting their information instantaneously on their phone. They're not waiting till the 6 p.m. SportsCenter.
That's right. They already got it.
They got it right now.
Yeah.
They're only going to tune in if they happen to want to see different highlights, or they happen to want to see, you know, post-game interview with the coach. But even you can even get that on your phone now. So
that's right. Yeah. So since you got your start basically in horse racing, a jockey would be just an incredible job. Most of those jockey guys are pretty little because you got to be light and you got to be...
Most of them are little.
Yeah.
And I am taller, but I was very light. And so it's all about the weight. And so I just had this fascination and obsession with horse racing growing up as a kid. And so I went to work at Belmont Park and I started galloping in the morning. And then I rode in some races as a jockey. And then I was having trouble keeping my weight as low. I needed to be like 100 pounds and I'm 5'7". So got into the training end of things. But
so was it that love for horses that got you to Montana and made you want to come back here and basically retire? Or?
My husband and I were looking for a place to retire to. And so 4 years ago, you know, right after COVID, we're like, we want a place.
The world went crazy.
But I had always had a love of this part of the country. My sisters and I owned a vacation home in Wyoming for 15 years down around Thane, Star Valley, you know, Afton area. So my husband and I bought this place 4 years ago. It needed some work. And he, of course, is still coaching, not able to come out here. So the first summer I'm here, the guy who owned the house before us, he didn't really care about mice. I don't like mice. The house was full of mice. So I'm sitting there watching TV and I've got mice running by my feet. And I'm like, okay, I can't deal with this because it's just me. I got to deal with this. The next summer I'm out there, I'm in the bedroom going to bed at night and I'm hearing all this scurrying and scratching up above my head and ceiling. Well, there's squirrels in there. So then I got to deal with the squirrels. So I set a live trap out on the deck, and it sat there for a week. Didn't catch any squirrels, but one night I'm laying in bed and I hear thump, 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 thump. There's a bear on the deck because of the peanut butter that I put in the squirrel trap. So I'm like, okay, I got to get rid of that trap. The next summer, I go to church. It had rained a little bit. The ground was a little muddy. I come back from church. I get to the front door. There's mountain lion paw prints on the deck. My shoes had been kicked aside. And guess what? There was a little puddle of pee where he peed on my shoes.
Marking territory.
And I said, welcome to Montana. There we go. Yeah. We're really living it now.
Bears, squirrels, mountain lions, mice.
Moose. Yes.
I will take it all over Fauci and mask mandates and lockdowns. And don't go to the beach. Don't go to the beach from Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, exactly. You can walk in the restaurant with a mask. You can sit there and take a bite, but then you got to put your mask back on.
What
world were we living
in? It was so weird. I think your story is like so many refugees, like legit refugees who fled these states.
Insanity.
for real America.
Correct.
Which we got, thankfully, right here in Montana. Okay, we'll talk more with Janine Edwards right after this. Plus, our producer Caden Bjornstedt will jump in on the conversation with some sports-related stuff, too.
Securing America.
The commander of U.S. Africa Command, General Michael Langley, spoke with reporters Thursday and explained why that continent is so critical to America's safety.
I've been charged by the Secretary of Defense to mitigate threats to the homeland posed by terrorist organizations, the most dangerous of which are based in Africa.
General Langley spoke specifically of Africa's Sahel region, home to countries such as Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger.
It is the epicenter of terrorism on the globe. Terrorist networks affiliated with ISIS and Al-Qaeda are thriving there.
He says the key is helping Africa stand on its own.
We should be able to help African nations build the self-reliance they need to independently confront terrorism and insurgencies.
General Langley says those types of alliances represent peace through strength. Kevin Uretzky, Fox News.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, hey, I've got a lot that I want to talk about. She did an interview, Janine Edwards, who's joining us here, she did an interview with OutKick. I think it was earlier this year, and they were talking about transgender athletes and women's sports. Now, that's been, of course, a major topic. But let's get to some sports-specific stuff as well. I mentioned we've got our producer, a great young man, Caden Bjornstedt, here. He's been an umpire for some of these high school baseball games. Caden, what do you want to throw out there? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I know it's baseball season, but going back into a little bit more of the college football and basketball side of things, NIL has been, yeah, no, it's
that's a dirty word, not house.
It's becoming a bigger and bigger issue throughout the college landscape, and I think it's a bigger issue for the families and the students themselves than it is necessarily for the colleges and the teams. What sort of, being around that industry for a long time, what sort of cautionary warnings would you give to folks who are looking at interacting with that sort of industry, whether they have a kid who's going to play sports or, you know, like how would you advise people to go about looking into that sort of side of things?
And of course, NIL, name, image, likeness. Basically, these college athletes can get endorsement deals, sponsorships,
yes,
whether it's from the local bar, you know, sports bar in town, all the way up to a car dealership or more.
Yeah, I can only speak to my experience as both, you know, a reporter and being the wife of a coach. It has completely changed the, you can just sense that the whole atmosphere has sort of been permeated with this now, it's all about the money. And, you know, there's that old saying, the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not actually money that's the root of all evil, it's the love of money. So due to a lawsuit that came about 3 years ago, the courts decided that these amateur athletes do deserve to be compensated for their name, image, and likeness when the schools use those entities to promote their university and to promote their teams. And that makes sense, okay? I don't have a problem with that. It's that you now have all these people coming out of the woodwork, all these agents who are now sort of the third party who are helping these kids get these deals. But what happened was there were no guardrails on this lawsuit, on this ruling. They just said, hey, you got to be able to pay these kids. Well, so what do you think happened? Well, all the schools, and I'm speaking to college football because that's what it was closest to me. Most of the bigger schools with a lot of money, the Alabamas, the Texas, the USCs, they have a lot of money. So they just started telling these kids, hey, we're going to give you $200,000 to come play here, and that'll be for your name, image, and likeness stuff. Even though the kid didn't necessarily have a deal, there wasn't anything in concrete or black and white.
They're just straight up paying them.
Straight up paying.
Under the banner of an NIL deal.
Under the banner of NIL. And that is immediately what started happening. So immediately when coaches are on the road recruiting high school kids, the kids would say, what are you going to pay me? So I have an offer. I'm a running back and I have an offer from this school and they tell me they're going to pay me $500,000. What are you going to give me? So it started going to the best players are now going to the highest bidders. And that
especially because you can so easily transfer. So if
correct.
So if you're a Montana State Bobcat fan or a University of Montana Grizzly fan, you're wondering like who's still going to be on our team next year, not because of the seniors
roster,
we lose,
yeah.
But because like if they can make more money transferring to another program, why would they stay at MSU or UM?
Well, and then the other change that came about at the same time, which was really unfortunate, was that they opened up the transfer rules. It used to be that a kid could transfer once, but he had to sit out that year, his transfer year, and he couldn't play for a year. So that deterred a lot of people from just jumping around. Well, they did away with that. So now there's two portal seasons, basically. Kids can transfer twice if they want. I mean, most of them don't do that. They just transfer once. But there's no rules. They don't have to sit out. They can just jump around. So every year, you're looking at your roster, and you're like, okay, who do we got, and where are they from? And you don't know who anybody is. And what does that do to team spirit? What does that do to developmental programs? Like my husband, the last 3 years, was at Wake Forest. Dave Clawson, the head coach, did a great job building that program in a developmental way, taking guys who are maybe a little under the radar, you know, your diamonds in the rough, and developing them into NFL caliber players, winning a lot of games. But it's because the kids were in the system for at least 4 years.
Yeah.
That's not happening anymore.
Your husband, Glenn Spencer, he was Oklahoma State University defensive coordinator. He also coached at Duke. He played for Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. Wake Forest, etc. And you were telling me during the break, Caden, I don't know if you heard this, but Janine was telling me during the break that this whole NIL thing is the reason why he's like, basically, I'm retiring.
I'm ready. Yeah.
I'm getting out of this. So, yeah, follow-up question from you, Caden, because, from the coaching and from the team fan standpoint, it's like, holy cow, like, do we even have teams anymore, right? Because the teams get broken apart, ripped apart now twice a year. What follow-up would you have?
Well, I mean, speaking to that from personal experience, we're big Cornhusker fans in my family.
Okay.
We just got Matt Rhule, who I love as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he was at our school for a year, and he was saying, hey, I'm thinking about quitting just because the whole NIL stuff is such a headache.
It is.
And not to mention, I mean, you get the good players, they're receiving millions of dollars, not
correct.
Just thousands. So the amount of money that's flowing through this industry right now is crazy, and I think it has a big chance of doing some harmful things to people who deserve to be there.
Correct.
Following that, how do we go about making sure that that doesn't escalate to the point where we have kids ruining their lives because they're getting all this money that I think that they deserve, maybe not to the millions aspect, but they definitely deserve to be paid for their name, image, and likeness.
Correct.
But how do we keep it from going over the edge and sending, them down a terrible path?
Well, that's the million-dollar question that everybody's trying to answer right now. You've got politicians in D.C. trying to figure it out. You've got the heads of universities trying to figure it out, athletic directors, the power conferences. There's a ruling that's about to come down in the next couple of weeks. It's the House settlement, House versus NCAA, where Judge Claudia Wilkin is poised to approve this ruling for revenue sharing, which that's another piece of the puzzle that we didn't even talk about. But when that ruling does become official and when she does decide to put this into law, the schools themselves are going to have to dole out $20 million per Division I school to share with their athletes. Most people are saying about 75% of that $20 million is going to go to football. The rest will be divvied up between the other sports. So there's that. But they're also supposed to put some enforcement and oversight committees in place to guarantee that this NIL, name, image, and likeness money, is exactly going to legitimate name, image, and likeness proposals, and that the kids are getting paid.
It's not just the university paying these kids off, basically. Yeah.
They're hoping that the revenue sharing, the $20 million cap for this year, they're hoping that that will sort of even the playing field. Everybody's going to pay out the same amount of money. But now you've got universities that don't have as much money, like smaller schools, like a Georgia State, who don't have $20 million to be paying their athletes, so they've got to come up with the money somehow. So it all goes back to, are the tickets going to cost more? Is it going to cost more to park? How much is it going to cost to buy a hot dog or a jersey?
Prices.
Tuition, but everything.
Yeah.
That's it.
So we talked about how, you know, ESPN started going woke. Really, corporate America started pushing this. Now corporate America is in retreat mode on all this woke stuff. But it's also interesting. It prompted a pushback. Now you see guys like Stephen A. Smith speaking out against, and he's a Democrat, but he's speaking out against the Democrats. He was just grilling Jake Tapper for his book for Jake Tapper himself lying about Joe Biden, basically, these last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've spoken out on the transgender athletes and women's sports topic. It's pretty crazy. California today at their state track and field championship, they're if the boy beats the girl, they're going to let the boy be on the podium with the medal, but they're also going to let the girl there to share the podium. I mean, it's just like, really? Come on. You know, it's...
First of all, I think if there were enough transgender athletes out there, why don't they create their own division? Okay,
yeah.
Let's have a third section then. Let's do a third gender. And that way it's really fair, because that way the men can compete with the men and the women can compete with the women and the trans people can compete with their own, and let's call it a day. I personally don't agree with men competing against women. It's just physiologically not a fair competition. Men are bigger, they're stronger, they have greater lung capacity, they have more bone density, they have more muscle mass. It doesn't matter if you take hormones. Those physiological assets and attributes have been there since the day you were born, and as you started growing through, you know, childhood and puberty, you're just built differently than a woman.
Well, Janine Edwards, we got to get you back in here, because this has been a ton of fun. And I, especially as this House, we got to do a follow-up on the House hearing with this NIL stuff. Because it's got implications here in Montana as well.
And I just want to give a shout-out to Rob Sisson, who was the guy who set this up, who had emailed you and said, you got to get her on. Great guy.
No, and he was spot on. Thank you, Rob Sisson, for linking us up with Janine Edwards. Less than, about a minute to go here, we were talking horse racing. Have you ever been to Indian relay races for horse racing?
You know, I have not, but
I have
a friend of mine who was doing PR for those Indian races, and she would stay in Buffalo, Wyoming, and she would stay for like 2 months. She said it's a blast. I've never seen it.
It's like traditional horse racing meets NASCAR.
But it's relays, right?
But it's relays. Yeah. So basically, how the relay works is like, okay, they might, so you're there, you're shirtless, and, you know, you've got your regalia on. It might be just a tiny little, you know,
maybe
outfit
you're
covering. Not me, but these warriors on horseback.
Right.
They jump on one horse bareback, race as fast as they can around the wreck.
Wow.
The track. The next horse is waiting for them. They have to get off of that horse, jump bareback on the next horse,
wow,
and race. So, I mean, and the announcers.
That's crazy.
It is one of the coolest things
that's
you could ever see.
That's real horsemanship and real athleticism.
It's incredible.
And I got to see that.
Oh, yeah, you got it. Janine Edwards, great to see you. Speaking of NASCAR, Dale Earnhardt's right-hand man will be right next to us right after this.
This is where Montana talks at, with Lane Nordland.
Today is the final day of the Montana Stock Growers Association's mid-year meeting underway in Butte. And attendees were very eager to hear the forecast from agriculture meteorologist Brian Bledsoe. And unfortunately, he shared that things are going to start drying up pretty soon across the West.
Well, a couple of things that are important. I mean, obviously, we came out of a pretty hard winter for, and I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because last winter we didn't have a winter, and this past winter we actually had some winter weather with some places saw quite a bit of snow out of the seal. And I don't want to say everybody saw a lot of snow, because that wasn't the case. We saw some pretty good winter weather, and we also have seen some good spring moisture, not just in Montana, but also, you know, we really kind of flipped the script from dryness in western Dakotas to a lot of water. We've been graced with this moisture, at least in the near term, and I'm watching the weather setup that's coming through next week that's also going to give a good chunk of Montana and parts of the northern plains some more good water. So at least through the first couple of weeks here in June, we're really setting up to be in great shape, you know, for the most part. My fear is that the weather pattern will eventually take a turn to a more dry side of things and also warmer. We haven't been terribly warm in an extended period of warm weather, and I'm fearful that once that hits, we're going to go from all the nice moisture we've had to not exactly what we want. And I think that that's probably going to be the theme going forward through the majority of summer.
I'm Lane Northlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, great now to have David Allen in studio with us here, back with us on Montana Talks. He's the former CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Also was the right-hand man to Dale Earnhardt Sr. back in the NASCAR days. In fact, there's a new documentary that's out now. And, of course, David Allen featured prominently in this Earnhardt documentary. But before we talk about that, let's talk about the rodeo, outdoor rodeo in particular. He's bringing it back. David Allen now heads up the Nile Rodeo in Billings and the Nile Stock Show and so much more. And David, last time we talked with you, you said we're going to have some big things coming, and you got some big things coming.
Well, yeah, good morning. We're working on it. We're getting there. Every day there's a little more progress down there at the Metro, and the arena's coming, and you're going to start seeing substantial progress here in the next week or so. There should be a crane coming in probably late next week, and they're going to start putting up. They're already building pieces for the grandstand out of the aluminum stair treads and ramps and stuff, and the infrastructure will really start to move up. And by mid to late July, we're going to have everything will be up. The arena and the grandstands, everything will be ready to go, and then we rodeo in August.
Yeah, it's crazy. So for those who aren't familiar, so they had, you know, these big outdoor grandstands. I was talking about Indian Relay with Janine Edwards just a few minutes ago, and I remember being in those grandstands when they had the Indian Relay races. Well, safety issues, things like that, they had to demolish those old grandstands. Yeah. And for a long time, people would drive by and say, hey, are they going to rebuild? Are they going to do something? What are they going to do with that space? And then you came out with the Nile and said, hey, we're bringing back outdoor rodeo. We're going to do outdoor rodeo again for the first time in a while now, with a very ambitious goal of making it happen this August. And it's almost June now, but hey, sometimes a deadline is what forces things to happen.
I don't know if it was ambitious or foolish goal, but yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be really good. I think it's been 8 or 9 years since they've had outdoor rodeo here, and that's the way it ought to be in August. And it's going to be during Montana Fair, you know. So the stars just all kind of lined up about a year ago or a little more. Of the county commissioners got on board and said, hey, we can do this arena, we can do the project. And then Stonyfield and all of his crew at the Metro have been great to work with, and so it's
It's and a you've
community
got some,
project.
You got some great talent and stock that are that you've already announced are going to be on hand for it. Talk a little bit about the talent and the stock that are inbound, but then also paint the picture for our listeners who can't see visually any of the design plans or what the new panels look like, or paint the picture for what it's going to look like come August.
So the arena will be right about where the old one was, and it's roughly the same layout east to west and whatnot, but it'll be a 3,500 seat grandstand that'll be facing basically the south and facing the interstate. It'll be a 150 by 300 arena. We got brand new Prefert, which is the best made panels and chutes and pans, and Hank Franzen from Powder River Rodeo is going to supervise the construction and the putting together of the arena. He was the winning bid on that, and he designed the layout for it. So it's going to be state of the art. And then, like you said, the stock we're going to have between Sparky Dreesen's J Bar J out of Circle, and then his son-in-law Cullen Pickett from Texas, we're going to have over 50 NFR horses here, and a number of bulls as well with the NFR of Cullen's and Sparky. So we're going to be back in the rodeo game in a big way, and we're on the same weekend as Baker by design, so that they can work Baker and Billings in the same, sometimes the same day, and that makes it a very lucrative weekend between the two events. And the folks in Baker, Jennifer over there, and those folks have been really great to kind of form a little bit of an alliance with, and I look for that to grow.
That's great, yeah, and it's I like how the big town's working with the small towns to promote both events. And well, they've done the state rodeo out there in Baker before, too,
I believe they have, and I think the state high school finals is in Kalispell end of next week.
I just saw an update earlier this morning about the state rodeo. Yeah, where did I put? I've got a million news stories in front of me here. Where did I put that one?
Week. I know that. I think it's June 2 to 7 or something like that.
Yeah, if it ain't today, it ain't in front of me yet.
Not, right? It's not today. I do know that. Yeah.
I got to, those 300-meter targets, I got to shoot the 25-meter targets first that are sitting right in front of me here. Now, tell me if I get any of this wrong, because Google doesn't work anymore. So I went to Grok. I said, hey, tell me about this new Dale Earnhardt documentary and David Allen's role in the documentary. We've gotten a chance to talk with you about your Dale Earnhardt days with one of my favorite stories about you talking about the Dale Earnhardt days. We had Bo Wagner with us, too, who's a great rodeo producer and has so many connections in the music industry. And the Wagner family is just a great rodeo family. Just great people all around, but I loved Bo when he was telling me this story, how he went to go work for you and Dale Earnhardt. He was an 18-year-old kid from Billings, Montana. He shows up at the airport and he hops into Dale Earnhardt's limo, and that's the start.
He hit the ground running from there. Bo jumped right in, did a great job. I mean, he was pretty grown up at an early age, and his mom was not real happy with me at first when she's like, you're taking him clear out there to North Carolina. And well, then he came back with a wife, and now they live here. So,
and she's great. She's serving on the school board. Yeah. Just a remarkable woman of faith.
Yeah,
so.
Brooke's awesome. Yep. Yeah.
So apparently it's a 4-part documentary series. It's on Amazon Prime. The first two episodes, I think, are already out.
Actually, they're all out now. I watched last night with my wife and boys, we watched number 3, and because I had not seen any, I went to the premiere last week in Charlotte, and they showed us the first 2, and then we watched last night's, and I had a lunch with your pal Richard Childress last week when I was out there.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I went to his winery, and we hung out there for a little while. And
I saw him at Safari Club at SCI. Yeah. And I had to name drop. I was like, well, okay, what do I say to a legend like Richard Childress? So I said, hey, so I think I texted you. Hey, what should I say to him? And then he had some choice things to say back to you.
Yeah, well, he lies more than I do, but, it's...
Which, as big of a hunter as you are, that's a hard thing to compete with there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I can't compete with his checkbook and going to Africa and everywhere he goes.
And lying about how big the thing you shot actually was.
Right,
or,
right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can shoot a giant, you know, that's no big deal.
So you watching it, being in it, what was it like watching it, especially with your family?
Well, I don't enjoy watching myself on camera, I can tell you that, because I've really aged.
You and me both.
I got to get a new mirror at home because it's not working. The documentary is the best that's ever been done on Dale, and it's very authentic. The Imagine crew, which is Ron Howard's company, the most first-class people I've ever worked with. The amount of research and stuff was tremendous. Some of it was hard to watch. In number two, where they touched a lot on Neil Bonnet's death, because Neil and Dale were very close, that was hard to watch. Now, I know number four is obviously going to be on, you know, Dale's death, and so that'll be tough. But a lot of it's been great to watch. It just brought it all back, all those times. I mean, I started late 1980 and all the way till, even after his death, I was involved with Junior and Childress and those guys for a number of years. It brought back a lot of emotion. And then going back to the premiere and seeing a lot of the folks like Chocolate Myers, who's on the crew, and Will Lynn and Kirk Shelmerdine, and all those guys now are in the NASCAR Hall of Fame because they were on Dale's crews in the 80s. It was just so cool to see all those guys.
I watched this show, Warfighter, because I'd seen all of my Ramadi Iraq fellow veterans kind of mocking it online. So I was like, okay, I better go see what they're mocking. And I watched it and was like, what are they doing? Why is this happening? Yeah. Why is this not happening? It still brought back some pretty intense emotions. I'll bet it brings back some pretty intense emotions for you.
It does. And the cool thing about this documentary, because there's been some things done on Dale, I haven't seen anything that was even a stretch in reality of, no, that didn't happen. Or that. I mean, they are being very authentic, and they took great pains to be authentic.
Yeah. One of the nicknames for Dale Earnhardt Sr. was the Intimidator.
Yep.
So how do you work with a guy known as the Intimidator? And did it lead to some struggles with, you know, Wrangler jeans and some of your big sponsors? We'll talk about that here right after the break. Stand by. Shortest break of the hour. Back right after this.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. Sometimes when I'm watching rodeo, I'm like, man, that looks like a ton of fun jumping on the back of one of those things. But then all I see is ow, 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 ow on my lower back every time I see them bumping along out there in the dirt. Well, let me tell you about Power Plus Pain Aid, you know, because you guys like to get out there and have fun, work hard, play hard too. But you're going to get some aches and pains that come with that. And you want a little energy, right? A little pre-workout, as I like to take before I go to the gym. Well, let me tell you about Power Plus Pain Aid. It's a product that was all created by a Marine Corps veteran from Big Fork, Montana, and it's just that. You get the energy like an energy drink, but you get the pain-relieving vitamins, the natural pain-relieving vitamins that are included in this small energy drink as well here. So it's a quick shot of energy and pain-relieving vitamins. If you go to drinkpowerplus.com, you can take 15% off your order. Just use this code, FLINT15. Use the code FLINT15 at checkout. At drinkpowerplus.com. David Allen with the Nile Rodeo here. You know, you could have just retired. Why not just retire?
For 2 years I was retired, and and this thing, the Nile thing, came up, and I'm having a ball. I'm having a lot of fun. I really like the Nile organization and what those guys have stood for and the history of it. And we're, as you know, you have Becky come on Fridays, and she's working with us now. And we're just putting a new shot of adrenaline into Nile and, you know, sprucing it up and kind of refocusing some things, rebranding
it. You're passionate about it because it's not just about your love for rodeo. It's about the West and Western culture.
Oh, yeah. It's rural. I mean, rural life is real, and thank goodness it is, because I've lived in the cities and it's highly overrated.
Yeah. It is. You were talking about Richard Childress. Only finished the sixth grade. Dale Earnhardt Sr. only finished the seventh grade. Yep. Look at the remarkable success of both of those two. I was asking Grock for some questions here because, you know, I don't, you know, I was just a kid when Dale Earnhardt was this big of a deal. So obviously I knew who he was. But
rub it in, will you?
Probably around the same age as Bo there. But anyway, he was known as the intimidator. Look, I've seen this, you know, in the military, like, hey, you know, being in a special operations unit, you know, it's like, man, if you're going to be in a special operations unit, boy, you better be ready because, man, those Green Berets, those guys are incredible. Navy SEALs, but hey, you know, same thing I'm assuming with NASCAR. Look, if you're going to be running with the big dogs, if you're going to be in the fast race like NASCAR, you better be ready because they're going to expect you to run hot too.
Yeah, working for Dale, you're not for the faint of heart for sure, and you better be able to take it. He was blunt, he was tough, he was demanding, but he never demanded more of you than he was willing to give. So, you know, he was fair about it, but I took a lot of butt-chewings. Maybe next to Junior, I took the second most. But you had to do it. You had to stand up to him because he would not respect you if you didn't.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, you see that with other leading figures in business or in politics as well, is that they expect a back and forth.
Yeah.
Because and they'll change their mind if you can convince them as well.
I've worked with a lot of, you know, like I worked, Ty Murray and I were partners for 25, 26 years. And there's this real similarity. And, you know, there's type A people, and then there's guys like Dale, Ty Murray, and, you know, others that are like a double A or triple A. They're just in a whole different stratosphere of mentality and how they perform and whatnot, and they're not going to be denied. They just aren't. So
you talked about how episode 4 of this four-part documentary series called Earnhardt, they're all now available, but you expect that in episode 4, that's when they'll really get into talking about the tragic 2001 Daytona 500 crash. Mm-hmm. They claimed the life of Dale Sr. What was either your favorite part that you've seen in the documentary so far, or the hardest? Obviously, that's going to be the hardest part, but what's your favorite part, I guess?
Seeing the old Wrangler days, because that's when I started, and and it's a pretty famous part of NASCAR history now, when Dale and Darrell Waltrip were duking it out in the last four or five laps of the Richmond race in, I think, 82 or 3 or so, and they both ended up taking each other out and wrecking, and everybody kind of had enough of Dale. I mean, they were mad and blah, blah, blah. And they interviewed Dale, and he tried to downplay it as, oh, it was just racing and whatnot. But then the camera stayed on him after they took the microphones out of his face, and he had that sly, poop-eating grin of his. And you knew darn well. And that's what got him in trouble. It got him a big fine, and Richard came to my house the next day and was like, what's Wrangler going to do about this? Are they going to, you know, they're going to be disappointed in it? I said, no, do it again. I mean, we're all about it.
It gets more attention.
Absolutely.
It's like the PETA showing up at the barbecue joint in Great Falls and showing up in front of, all they did was give more publicity and more people to want to get out there and you know, eat the barbecue and eat a steak at Jake's.
Do they not know what state they're in? I mean, good Lord.
I don't think they know what world they're in.
Colorado's two more down, you know, it's crazy.
And it used to be America down there too, you know.
You know, a lot of it still is, unfortunately.
That's right.
That middle part isn't. So.
Just controlling it, yeah. Well, David Allen, great to see you as always, and thanks for the great work of Becky Hillier as well. It's always fun to catch up with her too. So,
thanks,
great man. To see you. Keep us posted as things progress.
We will. Rodeo Billings, going to be fun.
All right, man, we're out of time already, and it's Friday. Hey, have a great weekend, and we'll be rocking and rolling Monday again.